Anyway, so what's been going on with you guys?
Nothing.
Okay.
I didn't realize we were recording.
We've been recording for several minutes now.
Are you serious?
Yep. I'll be cutting off the front end.
Oh, okay. So, cool. I was singing to myself just there.
That's staying in. No. Anyways, so I guess this might end up being the last episode of the Wayward Podcast.
No, it's going to continue on.
Yes, but actually, well, I guess we should say right off the bat that we might be losing a member. Actually, we are losing a member.
It's pretty much decided.
It's not. It's not. We might be. So I guess let's let the cat out of the bag. Sarah is
dead.
No.
Remarkably ganky for being dead.
No, Sarah is...
I came back.
Well,
I told you not to bring me back, but I would be really upset if you hadn't brought me back.
But Sarah is moving to the U.S., back to the U.S.
Yeah, I'm moving to, of all places on this great green earth, Austin, Texas.
It's a great place. So yeah, this will definitely not be the last... We'll be hearing.
This isn't the last you've heard of me.
You're moving, I think, next month, beginning of.
Yep. So I'll be in my hometown, Connecticut, doing nothing for about a month, and then I'll be in Austin in April.
Yep.
So you guys can feel free to stalk me, and put flaming bags of dog poop on my front doorstep, all you want.
And so we'll definitely be hearing, since you're going to be moving to Austin, we'll most likely, where the oneofus.net home base is located, we'll definitely be hearing more of you. So,
definitely, probably.
Yeah. So, I guess in this final episode featuring Sarah, I guess we should go around. This is the Wayward Podcast. I'm Toshi.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Kat.
We've got Kat back.
And yeah. Kat's on her phone.
Yes.
I am not. No, I actually am. It's work. It's work-related.
But, anyways, so what has been going on in the past 3 or so weeks with everyone?
People keep, like, multiple people have asked me this recently, but really my life doesn't really change on day to day, so.
This is the life of being, like, a freelancer.
Seriously, nothing really happens, except, like, nothing happens, like, work-relatedly. Mm-hmm. It's all, like, to do with social stuff, but, I can't really think of anything.
Meh. We've just been, like, running around Tokyo doing crazy stuff, going out on Sunday night, and...
Oh, yeah! Well, the reason at the beginning, if this, like, stays in the podcast, the reason I was singing, like, an 80s, like, new wave song, Enjoy the Silence, is that we went to this 80s thing on Sunday night. It was, it was basically all it was like a Sunday night, like, it's like a semi-regular thing, apparently, like, there's like a once-a-month party at this tiny little bar/club, in Harajuku, called, Bonobo. It's really cool. I always want to pronounce that in, like, a Japanese accent, but it's just Bonobo. Bonobo. But, like, so this one was 80s themed. Usually it's, like, deep house and stuff, but this was, like, 80s themed. So... It was a Sunday. It was meant to be quite a chill thing. We were like, we didn't go out Friday or Saturday for the first time in ages because everybody was kind of ill. Mm-hmm. There was like a cold and kind of stomach flu going around. Please. So kind of a few of us got that and everybody was just feeling a bit weak and depleted. But then on Sunday we were like, right, we're gonna go out on Sunday. We were just gonna like make it a really quiet, like, let's have fun type night. But it turned out like we came home at like 6 a.m. on Monday and... Like, a couple of people called in sick to work, and it was just like,
I hope my work hears this.
Yeah, me too. But it was, and we decided to go all out and dress up 80s style and do like 80s hair and makeup and everything. So I put the pictures on Facebook. I can actually, if you guys give me control of your Twitter, I can totally put them on Twitter as well.
Yeah, we will give you access later. Yes, because
amazing.
Yes, with Sarah leaving, Kat will be taking over her. Kat will become our Sarah, or I guess her.
It'll just be selfies of me all the time. No, I don't. I don't actually take that many. I don't take selfies. My selfie rule is: don't take a selfie unless your hair or makeup is really unusual or cool, or there's something like funny to say about the selfie. Otherwise, don't take it. Like, if in doubt, don't take it. The cat's about to, yeah. He wants to play with it, Toshi. God. Give him the batteries.
I got rid of the twisties so he wouldn't. Now he comes out the battery.
He has a giant box of toys right over there, but no, he wants to play with it.
Yes, we have, the cat is back.
Yay! Hi, Nico. Yes. He was so annoying today, though. He's in the doghouse, no pun intended. Just like, the most pathetic sight. He's an indoor cat. I believe he should be let out, but my Tony's belief is that he should be indoors. So we have kind of like moral, I think it's morally right to let cats go outside because they just enjoy being outside so much. But he is a declawed cat. Not that Tony did this. He came to us like that. So Tony believes that he couldn't survive in the great wilderness that is our suburban neighborhood.
Well, yeah. The cats outside in Japan, they can get a little feral sometimes.
Yeah,
so.
But I mean, the thing is, it's like, I've never seen feral cats around here, and there's a shrine right next door, and they tend to hang out there.
Yeah.
So. But, I mean, cats have such a strong homing instinct as well that he would totally come home as soon as he got hungry. Yeah. Well, now he's playing with a toy. That's adorable. But he, like, the most pathetic thing is when he, like, paws at the window, because he has no claws, so he's, like, with his little paddy feet, he's, like, pawing at the window glass to be let out, and he did that, like, constantly today, to the extent he had to be shut upstairs, but yeah. He's gonna do it again.
Yeah, it is. Speaking of the outdoors now, I can never say it right. Cedar season.
Oh, like hay thingy, fever. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, everyone's getting hay fever. I'm getting it, and I never had it before.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Japan, it's pretty much an epidemic. Like, if you don't have it, you will get it. It's like allergies. It's a natural allergen. So if you get enough exposure, you will eventually develop full-blown.
Is that an exposure thing? I thought it was like a genetic thing. You were born with it. That is messed up.
Yep.
No way.
It is an exposure. Like, I didn't have the allergies until like, I think about like 7 or 8 years ago. And then
really?
The first time I got it, I thought it was like, I got asthma. And I was just like, what's wrong?
Oh,
what's happening?
Oh my God. Great.
And I was just like, I couldn't figure out what was going on. I couldn't breathe right. I was like, I'd try to sleep and I couldn't sleep because I couldn't breathe, and I was just like exhausted, and just like couldn't figure out what was going on. I was like, "Oh, this is hay fever."
I did not know it was something that you could catch just by living here. Great.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank the Japanese government for that. Because again, this might be a wrong. Like, I didn't read this from any book. I heard it from somebody, so it could be my knowledge is wrong and bent somehow. But the way I learned it is that after World War II. Japan, having recently gotten bombed the fuck out, to rebuild, they planted a whole bunch of cedar trees so they'd have cheap lumber. And then, and those things, they grow fast and, you know, they reproduce fast.
Right.
And, which is kind of why the pollen's everywhere. But
yeah.
The thing is that they found out, hey, it's cheaper if we import our lumber from other places. And so they left that, it went wild, and.
Right.
It's growing everywhere.
Well, to be honest, I couldn't probably recognize a cedar tree if you put one in front of me. Like, I'm very bad at recognizing natural things. Like,
yeah, but like every year there's like videos up showing all the pollen like getting released. And it's just like this cloud of yellow just looks.
Great.
Yep.
Thanks for that. Okay, great. I'll just wear like a stupid mask every time I go outside.
Yep. I think I had a friend who thought they could cure it through like shock therapy. So they like went to a forest of cedar trees and was just like. And yeah, basically, could
it's like
not...
aversion therapy for hay fever. I don't think that works.
No, it does not work. It actually made it worse.
Oh my god!
Yep. So yeah, if I'm sniffling and sneezing through this podcast, yeah, that's because
I have this kind of like persistent itch in my nose, but I can't work out if that's like a cold or not. But I'm really hoping it's just the cold.
If your eyes start to itch, like you've got a constant, like you know, you've got
touch wood. Luckily, no, that has not happened yet.
Yeah.
So here's fingers crossed. It's not allergies.
So anyways, in other news, this is something I actually found really interesting recently. This is not so recent. I think this was like last week or something, but, a couple districts in Japan are actually, I guess you could say, quote unquote, recognizing homosexual relationships.
Yeah, don't watch Japanese TV anymore, so I used to get most of my news from, like, actual, those stupid news digest programs that are on in the morning, like, before I went to school. But I don't really watch Japanese news anymore, so I actually don't really keep up with the news. So most of the news I get is people sharing stuff on Facebook. So I didn't really follow this very closely.
Yeah, well, I think two districts it's kind of big because it's Tokyo, one of them is the Shibuya district. I forget, like, off the top of my head what the other one is.
Is it Yokohama?
Yokohama, okay. But, like, yeah, those are, like, pretty big central areas mm-hmm. of Japan, and they are now, I guess, officially recognizing homosexual relationships.
What does it mean when they recognize it? Is that legally recognizing it?
I believe so. Like, they're recognizing... I don't know if they're, like, they're going to give... It's at the moment, it seems kind of like that civil unions, that sort of step in between
the civil partnership kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of before actually recognizing at legitimate, which is kind of, it's really baby steps. It's kind of really dumb, but at least it's a step in the right direction. Yeah. And it's in terms of Japan, which has always been like very, very, very conservative in those areas.
Exactly.
I think it's a huge step in the right direction.
That'd be really interesting on how it affects visa statuses. Like, as if you got married in a state in the U.S. that recognized gay marriage and you came over here, would your partner be able, as two foreigners, be able to get the dependent visa?
I mean, I don't know the details. I don't think so. Like, knowing Japan, I don't think so. I think if anything, it's just like, at the moment, it's probably just like Japanese, two men, two women, only in this area. Hey, you guys have a relationship. Is that sort of thing? Like, you have an established relationship. I don't know if they're getting like the marriage benefits. Like the things
that would
like
be really interesting
because
I know like Japan there's a lot of in companies and stuff when you get married your salary gets a significant boost
because again Japan is very conservative in that area it's basically the man's taking care of his family
your wife is meant to start working and you know traditionally she's going to bring up your kids and you have to support the family and things so I know quite a few couples actually who just got married so because they were long term dating. And they were like, the guy's like, right, if we get married on paper, my salary goes up by like 10-20%.
Yeah.
So they did it even though they didn't have a wedding or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's still kind of ass backwards thinking, the Japanese thinking, but I mean, it's good and bad in some ways. Like, it's good in that, like, I guess, like, I mean, just the fact that they recognize that marriage thing and they're like, you're going to need more income. You've got a family now sort of thing. It's bad in that it only recognizes, like, that sort of gender bias.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Exactly.
So I don't know how it's really going to work with same-sex couples. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's only for men and men or just if they're also recognizing lesbian couples. I don't, I wouldn't be surprised. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the Japanese government was like, no, like, okay, we'll recognize two guys, but two girls, I don't know about that.
How do they even have sex? What do they do?
It doesn't differentiate. Like, according to this article on Bloomberg, it just says gay marriage, and it's in the Shibuya Ward, Setagaya Ward, and Yokohama.
Oh, so it's three areas, okay.
And so, Setagaya's huge. I mean, it's one of the biggest ones, right?
Yeah, Setagaya, and Shibuya is a fairly big, popular district. And
Shinjuku didn't recognize it, given that they have Nichome, which is like the gay area.
Yeah, well, they also have the government buildings, they're going to stick up their nose. So, but baby steps, honestly.
Yeah,
so.
That's good. That's fairly good progress.
Yeah.
I think I talked about in the last podcast when I saw I put this on my Instagram, but like the two girls holding hands on the poster in JR. I think I mentioned that last time and I was like, progress! But they were just tomodachi, they were just friends.
Yeah. But I mean, also another thing, this affects me personally because I don't know if I should even be saying this. Maybe I'll bleep this out, but like I have dual nationalities. I have an American and a Japanese citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
Because my parents, I am genetically Japanese because both my parents were Japanese, but I was born in the States.
Yeah.
Which automatically granted me American citizenship.
Yeah.
But Japan doesn't recognize dual citizenship.
That's right. After you're 18?
I believe 20.
20?
If you're legally an adult, you have to choose. You have to drop one.
I know so many, like half people and like returnees like yourself, who secretly have two passports though. I mean, as long as you enter and leave Japan on the same passport, then they won't clock it.
Yeah. So, okay. So anybody, all of our fans, please don't call the Japanese government on me. But,
that would be such a dick.
Yeah. But yes. So, I mean, it's kind of gotten to the point because like America recognizes dual citizenship, Korea recognizes dual citizenship. I mean, all these other countries and Japan is kind of like, they've got their head up their ass on that part, but they've gotten to the point where like, they're not going to allow it. Quote unquote, they're not going to allow it, but if you don't say anything, they won't really.
It's kind of tacit acceptance.
Yeah, they're not going to break down your door with a Secret Service or anything.
I think Thailand's the same. A lot of Asian, actually, quite a few Asian countries are like that. They make you choose.
Yeah.
I think Thailand is definitely like that because my friend in the UK has 2 passports but isn't strictly meant to.
Yeah.
Singapore is also the same, I think. You have to choose. But of course, you know, if you've got the option of, like, what, personally, if I had the option between, like, an American citizenship and a Japanese citizenship, I would take the American one every time, even living here. I mean, just like, the benefits the passport gives you is just so, like, so much more than the Japanese one, I think.
But it's a lot easier to have both.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's ideal.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're someone's willing to give me Japanese citizenship, I'd take it.
But it's baby steps, but it's a step in the right direction.
Japanese, this is like a tenuous link, but talking about Japanese people abroad, there was that really horrible incident where the ISIS hostages were killed, right?
Oh, okay. This is actually a twofold thing. One is that the Japanese media has been calling it's ISIS or ISIL, I think it's...
They've been calling it Nation of Islam, right?
They've been called, like, in the news for the longest time.
Islam Koku?
Yeah.
Right?
They've been calling it the Nation of Islam.
Right.
The Islamic country is what they've been calling it for a long
that's
time.
That's right. Someone on my Facebook is Islamic? Is that correct? Muslim?
Yeah.
And he was really angry about that. He was like, stop calling it Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
That's not what it is.
Oh,
like, they
are,
they're splinter terrorist group, but they're not the same thing at all.
Yeah, it's basically a blanket sort of, it's basically calling the entire, like, Middle East that's a terrorist.
Blanket generalizations in Japan. Surely you jest. Surely you jest.
Oh, of course not. But yeah, actually, recently, they recognized that, hey, this is not really a good idea. We're getting a lot of flack for it. So they've actually started calling it ISIL, I think. ISIL.
But
you were saying...
What was it? Sorry, I forgot his name.
There's Goto something.
Goto.
A couple of hostages.
That's right. Journalists, right?
Yep.
Both of them.
Yep. And yeah, they were captured by ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And
Kenji Goto.
Thank you. Kenji Goto. And... yeah, they were held, how long, I don't recall how long it was, but they're basically, it was said, like, ISIS basically said Japan should pay, like, because Japan is supporting the war,
because Japan was, sending aid, and...
They were sending aid, but it was, but the thing is that, like, it was non-combat related.
Yeah, because they're not allowed to participate in active combat, right?
No.
Because they only have the SDF, the Self-Defense Force. But, yeah, and then, so based on that, you know, you pay us this amount of money, or...
Like, you basically pay us the equivalent of what you've already sent to...
Or the hostages get it. And of course, you know, I find it so simplistic when I was actually really disappointed to see someone on my Facebook share this thing that said, oh, Obama's such a soft touch. You know, what's he going to do? All he did was write a strongly worded letter to ISIS. And I'm like, he's the president of the United States. He cannot negotiate with terrorists. You cannot. I mean, this is why governments, I find it so simplistic when people are like, why didn't they step in and save the hostages? Yeah, it's really disgusting, but you know, that the hostages were, these innocent people were murdered.
Yeah.
But if a government gets involved, you know, that's full-scale war. And, you know, that is not a step that you take over two individuals' lives, unfortunately.
It's not a light, very easy. So I think you easily do, unless oil is involved in a country that's neighboring the one that attacked.
Two people's lives does not merit mobilizing your armed forces, unfortunately.
Unfortunately,
like, it's not going to happen. So it's so simplistic to be like, Abe should have saved those Japanese people. Yeah, maybe, but realistically, that's not how, like, diplomacy works.
I mean, not for lack of trying, but...
Yeah.
It's not, it was not really. And that actually kind of leads into the Sony thing. You guys know about this, right? The interview.
God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was a little while ago. We haven't added our 2 cents into the issue, but because what happened was basically Sony got hacked, and then the people who were basically behind the hacking were saying, like, we're North Korea and we're doing this.
That was such a hoax. Come on.
A lot of people are saying, like, there's no way it was North Korea.
Surely they're still on dial-up, are they not? Like, they don't have the technology
Have you seen, like, the Photoshop pictures of Kim Jong-un and before Kim Jong-il? Like, there's, like, pictures of them, like, supposedly looking at, like, facilities and stuff like that, but they're so obviously Photoshopped. It's so hilarious.
They have Photoshop in North Korea? Are they using, like, Photoshop 3 or something?
Yeah, pirated versions of Photoshop 2.0.
And they're, like, warped. It's like bad Photoshop where it's like the background's warp, like when people try to make themselves skinnier and the background lights like warp in.
It's not that blatant, but you know, like
there's just like makes himself look super skinny.
Like they had one with like a naval exercise or something like that, yeah. And like the boats were obviously copied. There was more than there actually were.
The same little guy saluting.
There's pictures of Kim Jong Il like standing in like with a bunch of people, but like they're short. Like you look closely and their shadows are wrong.
Oh god. I don't know. Yeah.
So North Korea is kind of like, I don't really know how, like, what the technology level in that country is at all.
I'm, you know, endlessly, something I will always click on is any, like, photojournalist's visit to North Korea, any kind of story about a visit to there is so fascinating. Just, it's incredibly fascinating. And also, I read something really poignant that said in 30, 40, 50 years, when North Korea is, like, liberated, the people that were there, and the people in, especially in the work camps, will look at all the jokes that were made about North Korea and just be incredibly disappointed that people just made a joke out of it. Because, I mean, basically something the scale of the Holocaust is happening right now.
Yeah.
And we just make fun of it in popular culture. Like, The Interview is... That's the reason why I haven't seen it, actually, because I thought it was just feeding into this trend of just mocking North Korea when it's actually just... Of course, mockery is, like, a really powerful tool, but it's also... People have to remember that these, like, millions of people are suffering horribly in that country, and it's not, like, a giant joke. Yeah, it's, like, a humanitarian crisis. I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, so what happened was, like, the hackers were basically the people behind it. The hackers were saying, like, we're from North Korea, and we're doing this in protest of, like, The Interview. It's just being put out by Sony Pictures.
Because The Interview is, like, a spoof thing, isn't it?
Who's it is? I think...
Seth Rogen?
Seth Rogen and James Franco, I think it is. And what happens in the movie is, spoilers, they assassinate Kim Jong. Kim Jong-un, I think it is. They actually... not Il, but Un, but...
Right.
The son. But the current leader, the current dear leader.
Uh-huh.
But... And apparently they assassinate him in the movie, so apparently, supposedly in protest, they were just like,
Don't assassinate him in the movie. I saw it.
Oh, you did?
He dies.
Oh, okay.
In the movie.
Spoilers.
By accident. Yeah, spoilers. So the plot of the movie is, James Franco plays this, like, kind of hotshot, jokey, interviewer. He mostly interviews, like, celebrities like Paris Hilton or whatever. And he somehow lands an interview with Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-un's a big fan of James Franco's character's show. So they get invited over to North Korea to do an interview. And the CIA says, okay, you're getting full access, face-to-face access to Kim Jong-un. We want you to kill him. So they go over there with the intention to kill Kim Jong-un. They get there. James Franco's character realizes, oh, Kim Jong-un's actually a pretty cool guy.
I see the trailers, like, they're, like, playing around in tanks or something like that.
Yeah. They bond over a Katy Perry song.
Yeah.
And basketball. And
I might have to see this now. It's actually, you're selling it.
Well, it's not... The problem is, it's just not that funny. Mm. Like, a lot of people are comparing it to Team America World Police, which is kind of a similar idea that they're taking this horrible dictator and making him into a complete joke. Although the interview doesn't make him as much of a cartoon character as Team America. Team America makes him a flat-out, like, comic book villain. And the interview, he's like... It's kind of spooky. So, spoiler, what he's doing is a honey trap, which is when someone sweet talks you into trusting them by either flirting or being your best friend or something like that, and they end up turning on you. So Kim Jong-un does it like a honey trap on James Franco.
Okay.
And that's the twist of the movie.
No.
That he wasn't really this cool guy who had major daddy issues and loved basketball and Katy Perry. That he was just like a flat out lunatic.
Which he kind of is.
Which he is, completely.
Okay.
And Kim Jong-un tries to escape in a helicopter, and the helicopter ends up blowing up. So that's how he dies. I read an article that was talking about how, like,
you see these movies about North Korea, and they have caricatures of these dictators, but you never saw anything equivalent for, like, Gaddafi.
Mm.
And, like, the only people who ever really made fun of Saddam Hussein were South Park. But, like, Kim Jong-un is such a joke because of the way he looks. He's fat. He's got a weird haircut. He's pretty young. And a lot of people say, well, because he's Asian.
I was going to say, do you think it's like a racial thing?
Yeah. And, like you never saw really stuff about Gaddafi in the same way.
I did see the movie, was it The Devil's Double, about the guy who was the who was basically the body double for, well, not body double, but he was the, what's it called?
The double,
basically, for one of Saddam's sons. Yeah. I forget which one.
What does he do as a double? Like,
he basically, he serves as basically a living target.
In
case of assassination.
What's the hazard pay like? Can I be like Sarah?
He is basically treated
as... A lot of people do want to kill me.
He gets to live in the same lifestyle as Saddam.
And he's just some dude who happens to look a bit like...
Who happened to look like the... I forget which one. Well, Uday or Hussein.
Uday, thank you.
But he's like, so he gets to live the life, but he realized, like, these people are psychopaths. And just like, and then...
I want to watch this.
It's pretty interesting. Because it's based in real life. And it's something, it's about something that actually happened. It does have, spoilers cut, but there is one part where it kind of goes into an action movie scene, sort of sequence, which seems like, okay, this did not happen, sort of thing. But otherwise, it's really interesting.
So she's like sitting there watching, going, this did not happen.
Because it's like, he might as well be wearing a cape. It's just like, there's a gun shootout and he might as well be wearing a cape.
The plebs entertained, Toshi.
But up until that, it's like, so I'm just completely spoiling this movie, but it's like, up until that, it's really, really realistic, and it's like he's slowly cuts this all this glitz and glam. Yeah. It's just like he's royalty now, essentially. He's a body double, but he's royalty. But then it's like things are like he has to go to like dangerous places instead of Uday. He has to like do all this stuff. And it's just like I'm not oh god, these guys are psychopaths, and I've got to be one of them. Like I've got to pretend I'm this psychopath. And it's just like and it's this conflict stuff like that. And then it goes into an action scene. I'm just like what?
So that sounds fascinating.
It is. So, it is actually a really good movie.
This guy was apparently real.
Yeah.
But I would not touch those. I blew my nose.
That's fine.
She just touched my dirty tissues.
Because I wanted to take a picture of the cat, like, listening to us record the podcast. He's, like, being really cute and nice for once, like, sitting watching.
And not
just,
stealing our equipment.
I'm so going to twitch with this later.
So apparently the movie is based on this book written by this guy who says he was Uday Hussein's body double.
Yeah.
But there's conflicting information about that. But it is basically a known fact that Saddam, at least, had several body doubles who would appear in public, like, just going either to, like, if he was at a building, he'd have several different body doubles going out different exits, just to throw, like,
yeah, and there's actually more spoilers, but there's a scene in the movie where, like, Uday is like, okay, we gotta meet my father now.
Yeah.
It's like, I gotta show you off to my dad now. And, like, they go, and Saddam is playing tennis with his body double, and it's like, there's two Saddams. And it's
so
just like,
weird.
And it's like, which is Saddam and which is the double? It's just like,
jeez.
And because it's Saddam, it's like it's the leader, right? It's like you do not fuck with this guy, but just like, and there's two of him.
It's not a documentary, is it?
No.
Okay.
No. But it's just like,
it's the white guy.
Yeah.
What's his name? I think he's Irish.
As with dead air.
Because I was just watching her Google.
Sorry.
After this conversation about the movie, we should talk about the reaction to the killing of the Japanese hostages by ISIS.
Yes.
The actor's Dominic Cooper.
Okay.
He played.
So lots of race bending.
God, it's like Disney does Saddam Hussein's body double.
But actually, backtracking a little bit on the conversation, but going back to North Korea. And the whole ISIS, the talk about the interview in the movie. Basically, what happened was Sony essentially folded and said, okay, pulling it from theaters.
Because they threatened to bomb the theaters, right? Well, the hackers said if you show these, we're going to bomb the theaters.
And there's been a lot of back and forth on, like, you know, Sony was, like, you know, backing down.
Did they pull it permanently? I thought they showed it.
I believe they pulled it, but they said, like, they basically flat out pulled it completely.
Yeah.
And then there was, it's like, okay, if you really want it, we'll give it to you, but we're not like sending out carte blanche to everybody. It's just like, if you ask for it, I guess we'll give it to you, sort of thing. And just
so
like,
if the theater like asks, yes, we want to show this movie, then you take responsibility. We didn't.
I believe so. I think like movie. I think the Draft House in Austin actually showed Team America in protest or something.
Oh,
like
did
that.
They? They were going to, yeah. But then they decided not to. Yeah. I think.
But yeah, probably the guys at one of us, the other guys at one of us know more didn't know that because they were there. But
yeah.
So yeah. So like the fact that like Sony kind of like whereas a government would not. Like would not back down from that, but well, I mean, it's a complex issue, and Sony is not a government; it is a corporation.
It's a corporation. Can you imagine if just on the off chance that something did happen? Can you imagine the PR disaster that would have been?
And also, there's also another thing is that Japan is Sony is a Japanese country in Japan.
Yeah,
and I don't think our American listeners know this much. North Korea regularly shoots missiles into the Japan Sea.
Yeah, I mean, North Korea is like a legit problem slash threat slash scary thing that's kind of pretty close to us.
Yeah.
So
we are in missile range.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this was in the news several times before in the past couple decades, but like they regularly like provoke, like I think it's that sort of like, hey, listen to us, we're still here, we're so relevant thing, but they shoot missiles, they do missile tests, and it's just like they also tried to do a nuclear test a while ago. I don't know if they had a six, like there was one failed one.
I think it failed. Yeah, and a rocket launch also failed.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them they've been failing, but the fact that they're trying and they're doing it, like they're shooting missiles, it's like...
Didn't a couple land in Hokkaido? Or up, really up far north? Like,
I don't know if they even hit land. I know most of them hit in the sea, and they're all called, in North Korea, they're called successes, but looking at, but most of them are actually, they're actually really fails, but, in the North Korean media says, yes, we had a successful launch. But, so getting now to ISIS and just like the fact that the government, there's no way they could, so what happened was going back again, ISIS said, pay as much money to us as you pay to like to support this war effort that's hurting us. So, or else we'll kill these people.
And Japan's like, do you know how much debt we're in? Are you fucking insane? Like we're barely keeping our heads above water right now. Like,
And so, yeah. So what happened was the hostages were killed.
I think the female journalist was killed before Goto Kenji was.
Yes.
I remember waking up to it. It was really awful.
As is always happens with these things, pictures start going around online of
the video was released of him being beheaded, and it was just awful.
It's a snuff film,
It is. I didn't watch it myself, disgusting. But what was really interesting was the reaction.
Yeah.
Of course, well, actually, on my connections, my Japanese friends didn't seem to react to it at all, which I tend to find is the case, like with big international news, like anything political, anything like quote unquote difficult news, people don't really react to it, especially people my age. They tend to just like, oh yeah, something bad happened, okay, kind of thing. Nobody talked about it.
There's no major activism.
No.
For something like this, which is it's very disappointing. But yeah, and so what also happened, another result of this, which is kind of, I guess you could call this black humor, but they had a press conference because the media found Kenji Goto's family, and they wanted to interview his mother.
And he was a really, I'd heard of him through before, just on an NHK or something, and he was a really, like, unusual guy in that he was not your average Japanese dude, and that he was always... a really ardent activist. He went to underprivileged countries and visited, he was a journalist, so he visited the schools there, and then he came back to Japan and told Japanese children how privileged they were to have an education and that they shouldn't take it for granted, And he was really outspoken, really opinionated. So obviously he wasn't your standard Japanese guy, especially your standard Japanese journalist, because they're all in these press clubs where, the newspapers are kind of told what to write by the appropriate government body, which is kind of so corrupt, but he was freelance, he was really independent, so
which
he was
very commendable.
Yeah, he was an orange stand-up guy by all accounts, but then his mother's reaction to his death was basically, well, that's what he gets for doing dangerous stuff outside of Japan. He's so selfish for leaving his wife and children alone now that he's dead. He kind of deserved it. Was basically the tone.
Yeah. The thing was, they had an interview with her before, when they basically found out that, the news broke that he was being held and stuff like that. And they got in touch with his mother and they had a press conference. And I think this happens every year. There's gotta be some sort of award for the most weirdest, outlandish, or dumbest a TV interview.
That crying politician from
last year. Yeah, the crying politician. There was the guy who pretended he was deaf, the composer.
Oh my god, yes, I remember him.
There was the lady who...
Don't you please tell her about this?
Okay, there's the guy. Okay, you know the game Resident Evil, right? Apparently the composer for that, I forget, damn it, his name just escaped me. I actually wrote an article on Kotaku about this, but there's a composer for it, and apparently pretty much everything he composed, and the thing was, his big thing was that he's deaf. He's a second coming of Beethoven.
Mamoru Samuraguchi.
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 Yeah.
That's so difficult. It's like Tamagotchi.
But yeah, that's his thing. It's he's the deaf composer.
She's just laughing at the picture. You guys need to go and Google Resident Evil composer and just look at the picture of him with sunglasses with him frowning. It's hilarious. He looks like Meatloaf.
So what happened was it basically came out he was all his stuff he was composing was being by someone else.
He had a ghost writer kind of thing. And there was this press conference which was just such schadenfreude viewed it. It was so embarrassing. Yeah. So basically I remember watching this. The journalists were ripping him to shreds. Basically this really ornery journalist was so you're hearing what I'm saying right now, but you're still claim you're partially deaf. And then the guy would be like, sorry, I didn't quite catch that. I think it's on YouTube, so you guys, even if you don't speak Japanese, it's really funny. I'm sure it's subtitled somewhere.
It was a
cringe.
Farce.
It was totally cringeworthy. I was just give it up. Just do the deep bow and apologize and get off the stage, please.
So that whole thing, there was that. There was also the lady who with the stap cells, who was she was working on some different new kind of cell, revolutionary cell.
Was proven, wasn't she exonerated from that?
No.
She wasn't?
She can't, they said, all right, we'll try to recreate what you've done. Redo your experiments under monitored conditions.
And she couldn't recreate the results, right?
She could not, and so it's basically come down to the whole thing was a fraud. I think one of the reasons was that the samples got corrupted or something like that.
It was really sad actually because it gave a lot of conservative commentators the opening to criticize her as a woman and as a female scientist. She's got a tough enough time without this as well. I mean, I don't know whether she purposefully faked it, and I'm pretty sure if she did, it wasn't her singular decision.
She
took the flak for it.
Yeah, she became a patsy, I believe. But her thesis stuff, a lot of stuff, those weren't the actual pictures.
Or they were photoshopped or edited or something. Yeah, I remember
a lot
that
of stuff
happening.
Like that. Just,
that was really complex, though. I couldn't quite follow what you had to follow that story pretty closely, I think, and I couldn't really be bothered following it. But that
also had a televised interview, press conference.
She was wearing an apron.
Yeah, one like that. The co-authors.
Yeah.
Committed suicide.
Okay. That just got
Japan.
That just got
solution
darker.
To everything. God.
So, going back to Kenji Goto's mother, interview with her before he got basically executed, before he got killed.
Murdered, right?
Yeah, murdered. Yeah. Was another kind of farce. Apparently what happened was her family had said, you do not want to, don't talk to her. You don't want to talk to her. Please don't talk to her. And, the media was we want to get her opinion.
Because they knew that she would say something that.
She would say something really stupid or bad or something. And and so they had a press conference. And, the whole thing, it basically started out Because I haven't actually seen the entire thing.
Mm.
I saw it like from a midpoint because it went downhill really quickly, apparently.
Yeah.
Like she immediately, like she branched off into her own agenda, like where she's just like talking about like, and this is the sort of stuff that happens in a world that promotes nuclear powers.
Nuclear testing.
Why are we talking about this sort of thing? And so it got, the whole thing got derailed, and eventually like the press was like, okay, thank you, that's enough. Goodbye.
Yep. I mean, she's 80-something, right? I mean, I'm pretty sure she's not quite old there anymore.
No, but, yeah, it was... So that was, like, you know, sort of, like, you know, right off the bat, I think... Because that happened in, I think, late January or early February. And so that was, like, right off the bat, oh, we've got a contender for this year's... It was just, like...
Horrible press conferences.
Because, like, yeah, because Japan has them every year, so...
Mm, pretty much. Oh, well, that was dark and depressing. let's talk about something else.
If I could hijack the podcast.
Yeah, go on.
Because a few episodes ago, I talked about a movie, God, what's it called again?
Baymax?
No, not that.
Father.
Yeah, was it Like Father, Like Son? I think that was the Japanese title for it. English title for it. But apparently the response was actually fairly good for that. I'd like to talk about another. I'd like to hijack the podcast for another. Another review.
Didn't talk about the Silmarillion?
No.
I'm going to give a 1-hour presentation on the Silmarillion. I've never read it. I have no idea what it's about. But because someone isn't here.
Someone who said they would be here.
That's someone who said they would be here.
And I'm going to give, like, really uninformed commentary on the presentation and just talk about, like, what my opinion on the meaning of the Silmarillion, even though I know fuck all about it.
So we're going to save that for the end. So go ahead, Tosh.
Look for it.
So this is a movie I think I mentioned on the podcast a while ago with Sarah. It's a movie called Monsters. I was interested in seeing it. I think it came out last year. Mm-hmm. And it's about, okay, to give a brief overview of it, it's about two people. One of them is a guy who has this superpower where he can control anybody he sees. Like, anybody he looks at, he can control.
That's so awesome. I literally just now had a flash in my mind of what so many myriad things I could do with that. Most of them involve me, like, going into a club and looking at a guy and just being like, meh.
That's rape camp.
Yeah, but is it rape if they enjoy it?
So, and the other one person is the only person the first guy's power does not work. It's basically,
How do you mean?
Like, the second guy has, basically, he's Wolverine. He regenerates.
Okay.
And because he regenerates, the first guy's power, it's like Professor X versus Wolverine. I look at the movie, it's called Monsters, and one of the main actors is, Tatsuya Fujiwara.
Him! Yes, he's the cute little from Battle Royale.
Yep, from Battle Royale. He was from Death Note.
Little round face with fluffy hair. Yeah.
I consider him the Japanese Leonardo DiCaprio because he's much older than he looks, and he always plays like teenagers and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but he's the guy with the power to basically control anybody by looking at them.
Oh, okay.
And it's I call this movie basically X-Men Light.
Definitely what it sounds like. Is it based on a manga?
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't think it has. It's probably based on a novel or something. Mm-hmm. But it's not based on any manga or any subculture source that I'm aware of. And interesting thing. Okay, so I'll flat out say that this is not a great movie. It's not like it's got a lot of problems. It establishes the powers, but it doesn't really set the boundaries very well.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Japan doesn't have a really great budget, so they don't go overboard with the they don't really can't really do all the CG special effect magic that they can do in like the X-Men movies.
Yeah,
but
being able to control someone is a really good power in terms of special effects budget because you really don't have to show anything.
Just do
this. You're totally controlling me. Oh my god.
So I'm gonna spoil. I'm talking about basically like the first 20 minutes or so, but it starts out with the guy who can control anybody. It starts out when he's a kid, and basically his mother basically takes him away from his father because his father is just like, this kid's a monster, we can't have him.
Right.
And the mother basically takes him away, and what happens is that the father catches up to them and tries to take the mother away,
mm-hmm.
and he kills his father.
Okay.
And then and basically it's a revelation of that this power is useful. I can make things that, you know, I don't have to, like, I don't need my parents, sort of thing. So he basically runs away and grows up on his own with this power, and he grows up in secret. One thing that's established early on is this power, while it's really useful, it slowly erodes his body. He slowly, basically, he walks with a limp because there's always a catch. His right leg is pretty much gone. It's basically rotted away.
Yeah.
So he's wearing a prosthetic leg.
I'm just looking at the website now, which Sarah's found, and I was just like, oh, he's kind of cute, but then I'm just like,
his right
rotted
leg.
A deal breaker.
Yep. That's the drawback of the power, because there's always got to be that. And what happens is one day when on a whim, he's like, I don't know why exactly he does it, but it's like basically on a whim, he's like controlling people, and then there's one guy who's just he makes everybody stop. And then he looks over, and then there's somebody who's still moving.
Cool. I'm just imagining that scene.
And it's like, what the fuck? And he tries to stop the guy, and the guy stops for a moment, and then he looks at his phone for a moment, and then starts, why can't I control this guy? What's going on? And then what happens is the guy gets hit by a truck. Gets hit by a truck.
God's sake.
And so
that's what happens if you nagara smaho. If you look at your phone while doing shit, Japan. Yeah.
He gets hit by a truck. And so the guy who controls everybody, I'll call him Professor X.
Okay.
But Professor X is like, okay, so
TM.
That was a fluke thing. I don't have to worry about this anymore. And then the guy comes back. Later on, the guy comes back. He runs into the guy again. What the fuck is going on?
Is this set in Tokyo? Because running into the same random person twice is not going to happen. That's so unrealistic.
It's set in Tokyo. Overall, it's kind of like that thing with, I guess you could call it, with Twilight or True Blood, where you've got the person with the superpower and the one person their superpower doesn't work on.
Yeah.
With Twilight, it was like, Edward can read everybody's mind except for Balance.
Uh-huh.
With,
and then Suki
yes,
is...
can read everybody's minds except for vampires.
Right.
Instead of them falling in love and all that sappy romance, they try to kill each other.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at the poster, and there's two quite hot guys, and then there's just a random girl pasted into the background. And I'm do we really have to have this female love interest?
Yeah, that's one of the weaknesses of the movie. So there are many, many weaknesses to this movie. It's not a great movie, as I said before. There's a romantic interest of there's a girl who shows up, and the way they bring her into the picture is kind of convoluted, and it's just it seems a little far-fetched. She happens to like, in the guy, I'll call him Wolverine, the guy who heals. Wolverine, loves maps. Like, he loves maps and stuff like that, and it turns out she has the same, she has the same hobby.
Oh,
and
whatever.
And
because you totally bump into people when you're out or at a bar or whatever. What do you like to do? Oh, I'm really into cartography.
Yeah.
Oh my god, me too.
Yeah. And well, what? Apparently she was driving the truck that ran him over. And
what
so.
The- And okay, so what, this is what, annoying.
So what happens is that basically, the family, which, her father, who's a guitar repairman, is like, you obviously pay hospital bills, stuff like that, because they fucking ran him over with a car.
Guitar repairman?
Yeah.
So I'm sure that makes a ton of money.
And he's just, and they're just like, this is all our life savings, we're very sorry, But it turns out, but it's just like, I just got fired from my moving job because I got hit by a car. But, maybe I can, hire me. Let me work for you.
Okay, I need to watch this because, I haven't watched a Japanese movie in a long time, actually.
I've been spoiling so much of this movie, but I'm basically talking about the first 30 minutes.
I'll just be looking at it. Okay, I'm just looking at the poster on the website, and I was trying to, while you were talking, I was trying to remember the reading of this kanji, and it's like, subete no ninge wo ayatsureru? Is that right? Yep. Otoko? Yeah, so the man who can control every human being, and then it's like, versus, yuitsu, ayatsurarenai otoko. So the only man who can't be controlled. I cannot say that. Ayatsurareru. Ayatsurarenai. That's so difficult to say, my god.
But, that's basically what it is. It's a guy with a superpower, and the one guy has superpowers.
That's a cool concept.
As a concept, it's very good.
I'm trying to think of another, action movie, hero, superpower hero movie that uses that concept. I actually can't think of one.
It's rare, unique, and and because it's focused on these two people, these two individuals, it's very down to earth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very close. It works as a very good, interesting character piece in that manner. And I mean, it's, the hallmark of a good movie is that it sticks with you in a positive manner. Like, I mean, I saw this movie over a month ago, and I still think about it. And just
you seem to, obviously, it stuck with you because you can remember most of it.
And it plays on some very interesting concepts and things like that. It does try to go into some hokey areas. It does have the one thing I cannot stand in, like, the one trope I cannot stand, which is the gay friend. The flamboyantly cross-dressing, always male, who talks like a woman.
I was gonna say, the gay friend in Japanese movies is always, like, the ultimate Nichome queen, who's, like, feathers and makeup and just,
it's the Japanese equivalent of the magical Negro. It's that token character who's always there, but they always say the one line that sticks,
heart of the movie, and
who always gives that one piece of advice that will, you know, set the hero on the right path.
And it usually ends in nanoyo or something that, right? Like,
so they have a character with that who's like, I don't even know. Like, I was just like, why do you have this character? That person. So I'm just like, why is this character there?
Ochiai Motoki.
Yep.
He looks cute, actually.
And so that kind of, like, brings, like, every time he's there, I mean, I can... I don't like whitewashing and, like, homogenizing everything. Everybody, everybody's, you know, all white characters in New York, New York. It's like, that's just nice being of friends. But, I'm always for, like, a variety of different types of characters, but every time that character comes on screen, it's just like, the movie kind of screeches to a halt for me. It's like,
I find that in Japanese movies as well, they, even worse than, you know, Hollywood, they shoehorn in stuff that really doesn't need to be there.
Yeah,
because they're trying to cater to everybody at once.
Yeah, that's another big weakness of the movie. It kind of tries to do that.
And they cannot stand a non-happy ending, except for in horror.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty sure I talked about horror before, but what I really like about Japanese horror is that the endings are almost universally really disturbing because nothing is resolved.
Yeah.
And the ghost isn't pacified. The people are, like, not, they might not be dead, but they're definitely not happy. And, like, they're probably gonna end up, like, with a really miserable, horrible ending.
And the thing about monsters is that I can't spoil the ending. I'm sorry, but it's not necessarily a happy ending.
Okay.
It is kind of happy, but if you think about it in the larger scale, it does have some implications, which are very interesting. Again, like, the concept of it is really interesting. And it's like, it's in this world of basically normal humans, there's these two people with superpowers.
So they're the only two?
As far as the movie establishes.
Okay, interesting. It's a bit like Heroes then.
Yeah. Another thing that's similar to that, I'm sorry, but what was that? That Will Smith movie, what was it?
Do you mean Wild Wild West?
No, of course not. The one where he plays a superhero. Damn it, I can't remember it. But there was a similar movie
it's an apocalyptic movie, right?
No. That's I Am Legend. No, it's the movie where
I Am Legend. No, that's what I was thinking of.
God, it's his name. The title movie is his name, but, like, he plays a superhero, and then there's one more person, and they fuck. But I guess you could say it's
Google search is the Google
Hancock.
Thank you.
That's right. That was actually pretty entertaining. Yep. I thought. Yeah, that was good.
But
he's still likable though. So
yeah, he was a little too likable. Like he starts the movie. Why are we talking about Hancock? But he starts off the movie as an asshole, and then because he's Will Smith and he's too likable, he ends up being a good.
That's right.
That was the weakness of that movie. But monsters, I mean. I think it's like, it'll be for 10 audience members, it'll be 10 different things. It's very interesting. It does try to have its cake and eat it too. It does, it does have several major flaws. It tries to shoehorn in a heroine. It does that thing where, for some reason, the bad guy takes the heroine hostage because he always has to, and the good guy has to save her.
God.
It's like,
so sick of that. Yep. Jeez. I mean, in this day and age.
And
seriously.
One of its greatest, another of its weaknesses is that, like, it establishes that, like, Professor X's powers that all he has to do is look at someone and he can control them. So, but
it's like, all pretty inconvenient. Like, what happens if he's like at the convenience just buying something and he looks at the guy and the guy just stops? He's like, I wanted you to ring up my purchase. Why do I have to do everything myself?
Well, no, one of the first scenes in the movie. Again, early scenes, so sorry about the spoilers, but he robs the bank by having everybody just basically take out all their money.
Awesome!
And like one person dumps out their bag, everybody puts the money in the bag, and then he takes it outside.
In total Japanese style, and all the notes are perfect, and all the faces of the notes are facing up.
Of course. But like, and like the tellers give all, like they all take out the money, they put it in the bag, and then they like take it outside to him and he walks away.
So it's kind of just reminded me of like a side story. So when we go out, if girls are listening to this, which I hope you are, when you go out, obviously you don't, well, I try to carry as few things as possible, like as small a bag as possible. So I have this thing that's like actually like a jogging pouch, like one of those little things that you strap to your arm that you put your iPod in or whatever. So I take that out clubbing, cause I like to dance a lot. And in Japan, pretty much every note or, you know, bill, if you're American, every note you get is like crisp and perfect. Mm-hmm. Like people really take care of money and they don't just cram it in their jeans pocket like you do in every other Western country.
It's also the quality of the paper itself.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Apparently,
it's a lot more crisp and less soft, but I just assume people just take care of their money here.
Japanese paper is really, really good. I mean, it's an urban legend.
It's made of washi. Japanese paper.
It is. So it's an urban legend that somebody like stopped a bullet with a folded bill.
Oh, come on.
I mean, it's an urban legend. I don't know the truth of that.
It's
but
like the equivalent of a Bible. It's my Yukichi stuff.
But yeah, Japanese bills are very nice. They don't crumple like American bills do.
You can actually, you know what? I washed a pair of jeans with like a 5,000 yen note. Mm-hmm. So you know that's like a significant amount of money. I'd be like,
it's like $50. Yeah.
$50, yeah. You know, I wouldn't be carrying around like that much cash in any other country, but here you routinely carry around $200, $300 in your pocket kind of thing. If you're a baller like me, obviously. But I washed my jeans with this money in it, and I was like, no, but it came out and it wasn't disintegrated. But if that had been the UK, the money is so soft and like it disintegrates like easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you wash your jeans with a £10 note and it's gone.
Really? In the US, they don't. They're fine.
Really?
Yeah, because they're made of linen. They're mostly linen.
I think ours are still paper, like in the UK. Australian money's cool, it's plastic. Like, it's really, really thin plastic. You can't tear it. Huh. And it's waterproof because Australians, all they do is go to the beach, apparently. But yeah, so I was saying, so I put all my money in this little pouch and it gets all sweaty and gross. And like, always come home at like 6 or 7 in the morning or whatever. And there's this convenience store on the way home to this house. And there's always the same guy working there at like the graveyard shift of like, I assume it's midnight to 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning. It's the same dude. And I always show up like in various states of disarray, sometimes with my shoes in my hand, sometimes just in random costumes, like covered in sweat, like been dancing for 4 hours. And like, I always buy my like whatever food that I usually buy like bread. I have this really bad habit of buying just white bread, just eating a slice of it on its own. I don't know. This is really embarrassing. But like paying for it, you pass the money across and you put it on the counter and it's all like screwed up and sweaty and disgusting. And they literally look at it like, what have you done to our, what have you done to our currency? Like they barely want to take it. They're just like picking up thumb and forefinger and just like stretching it out. But I think the Japanese bank, like the central bank, recycles notes like that get gross and disgusting.
Yes,
they pull them every so often, right?
Yep,
pretty often.
And they basically recycle and put up.
They print more. I think they print more money than almost any other central bank.
So, but yeah, Japanese papers.
Anyway, so that was like a dinosaur version that reminded me when you said robbing a bank. with it. I was like, if I was in that bank, like contributing my money to Gary, I'd be like, actually, you know what? You're all right. I don't want that.
But yeah, so Monsters, it's a very interesting. Like, I mean, I can't say don't watch it. It's not so bad that it's like, oh, it's not worth your time. It's not great. It's got its flaws, and like, if, depending on like what your quirks are, like, I can't stand this sort of thing, I can't stand this sort of trouble, you'll probably hang up on those, but.
It's something I can have on while doing the laundry.
But it is interesting, and like, you think about it a lot. It does have a few things that like, it undertones, like, okay, here's a spoiler. The title, Monsters, is spelled There's not, it's
spelled with a Z, Z right?
It's spelled with a Z, and the Z doubles as two. Because there's two of them.
Ooh.
They're two monsters.
Clever.
One, you know, the good guy, you know, there's the good guy who can heal, but he's technically a monster just like the other guy.
It's darn clever.
Yeah. But it kind of overplays that at the very end. It's just like, okay, I got, you know, I kind of picked up on that already, but, and so it, some of its stuff is not, it doesn't know how to be subtle with some of those,
yeah,
some of those things, undertones. But,
I have a question.
Yes.
Why would he rob a bank? Why would he need money if he can just make people give him stuff?
Because this power, it damages his body. He slowly corrodes his body. That's the thing.
So
that's it.
Naruhodo.
So he needs, yeah, he lives in luxury, but he needs money for that, and he can't really.
So he does a raid every so often, yeah, kind of thing.
And again, it doesn't.
Just get someone to, like, if I were him, okay. Logical flaw, Toshi. Yeah. What I would do would be get a dude. Does he have to be looking at the person to control them?
That's another thing. It doesn't really, like, so. Like, he can control anybody he looks at, but, like, there are often times where he's obviously turned his back to them.
Right.
They can, they're still under his control.
I would, like, look at a guy and be like, right, what you want to do is give me, sign up for a credit card, give me that credit card, and you pay that bill every month. Yeah. And you want to do that forever.
And so it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't really establish those boundaries very well. It just basically blanket says he has this power, just go with it, sort of thing.
Right.
So if you're a nitpicker like me, I mean, that, those areas, like,
wait. Yeah, as you obviously are.
So I'm just like, he's not looking at that guy. Why is that guy not going, hey, what am I doing?
Think you're just, you have to suspend your disbelief for this shit. I mean,
otherwise, it's a lot of fun. I would give it, out of a score of 10, I'd give it 5 X-Men out of 10.
That's like such an average score. Yeah, which one?
I mean, like, Wolverine, Professor X, Cyclops.
Those are the best
Grey
ones. Apart from Cyclops, I hate Cyclops. Oh, he's just so annoying.
But, like, as I said, like, for me, a score of 5 is worth watching. That's the line where it's worth watching, but it's not great.
Yeah, I mean, so thinking of movies we've watched recently, Sarah, like, we watched, because we're running out of spooky, scary things to watch, so we're pretty much, we've caught up to the horror industries, like, because we don't like grotesque, like, I'm sorry, that's Japanese, like, I can't remember the English word, like, really gory stuff, like, loads of blood and torture and stuff, I can't watch that shit. I mean, we watched that vampire, the comedy vampire movie, what's that called again?
What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh.
Yeah, by the guys who, sorry, complete mental blank.
One of the guys from Flight of the Conchords.
That's it.
It's a New Zealand movie. Mm. New Zealand made. I loved it.
There was actually a review up recently on one of us, wasn't it?
I gotta say, I mean, to be fair, I wasn't giving it my full attention. I probably should have been. I wasn't really in the mood for that kind of thing, but I really dislike, I've got this weird thing where I really dislike comedy horror. It makes me extremely uncomfortable because comedy horror tends to have, like, these gross-out scenes, like, suddenly, and you're laughing along with it, whatever, and then there's something actually really disturbing, and that mixture of, like, comedy and really disturbing imagery always puts me on edge. It always has, ever since I was young. So this movie did that to me, and I actually had to, like, I was like, this is way too much. Like, what? I'm really such a fucking wuss. Like, I was like, this is too much gore. This imagery is really weird and disturbing. I'm going to go and, like, edit some photos instead. So I did that and just, like, listened to it. Oh, my God. Ultimate cat stretch just now. That was so cute. So Nico is lying, like, listening to us record, and he just did the ultimate comfort stretch where cat, they, like, put their paws above their head and just, like, become super long. He's super happy right now. But one movie we did watch recently, it was The Last Exorcism. Which was, basically what happens is, I don't want to spoil it, but, well, I'm probably going to spoil it, so if you don't want to know, don't listen to this bit. But what basically happens is a preacher in a southern town, he's not, I don't think he's from the south, is he?
He's a traveling
preacher.
Exorcist.
Traveling exorcist slash revivalist preacher man. And he basically does exorcisms, but what's really cool is that the movie is set up as a documentary, and he has employed this documentary crew to kind of expose the fact that exorcisms are fake, so he's a fraud.
Is this a found footage?
No, it's not really. It's like a documentary. Yeah. It kind of is found footage, but not quite. Like, it's like the concept is he has employed this documentary crew of like three people, and you've got shots that are the crew filming him, but you've also got like kind of like God camera where, you know, we're watching this happen as the audience. But what the really interesting part of it is that he's a fraud. And these exorcism movies pretty much
it's always this really, like, for an atheist like myself, it's a really frustrating dynamic where the Catholics are right at the end, right? You guys should all not be lapsed Catholics. You should all pick up that Catholicism you dropped when you were 12. Because evil exists, and the preacher was right.
This will happen.
Yeah, exactly. And the exorcism works. I mean, the exorcist is the original, right? And and that is proven to be that the Catholicism is the way to fight evil. But this movie is different in that the guy is a fake. He doesn't believe in God. He doesn't believe in what he's doing. And it's really cool because he's like, this is what I use to play demonic sounds. And he shows you like a little MP3 player kind of thing. And he's like, I put these speakers in the room. And, you know, I have these electrifying like electrodes in my fingers that I use to touch people and they get shocks. And, you know, he has like a smoke machine and all that shit. So it really effectively builds this really creepy atmosphere because it becomes clear that there is something there and this girl is possessed. But it goes in a completely different direction. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to spoil it because I actually really liked it. So if I really, really recommend. That's probably the best exorcism movie I've seen.
I'm probably going to end up watching that after I watch Blair Witch.
You have to watch Blair Witch.
That's actually one that's on my list.
God, that's scary.
That's actually next on my queue. So
yeah.
Yep.
I with Blair Witch, I tend to find that people have go one of two ways. Have you seen Blair Witch, Sarah? You haven't. Because found footage makes you nauseous, right?
Okay, the shaky cam.
Yeah, I mean Blair Witch. I find people go one of two ways. They either do not find it scary at all, or they find it bloody terrifying. And I was in the latter group. If you're imaginative and if you have an active imagination, you will find it scary, I think.
Oh, goody.
If you're like a creative type, because it really does leave a lot up to you to infer from what you're seeing. Oh, God, I'm just thinking about the final scene. Well, that's so scary.
Another great one we saw was The Tunnel.
Yes! Oh, my God, that was so good! And, that was great!
That movie was actually, like, funded. It was a crowd-funded film, Australian film, about this reporter and her crew who go down into these tunnels underneath Sydney. Oh my God, that was
great.
Scary.
It was great. We had really low expectations, right?
Yeah.
And also you were a bit like, found footage, but the camera was pretty steady. It wasn't like running up and down.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be like a professional cameraman doing it, not just like Stan's dad from South Park. Yeah.
This is how Sarah judges found footage. She's like, is he meant to be a professional with a tripod? Okay, kind of thing. But it's super scary.
Yeah, it's so scary. So, like, any time you've ever been in a subway or in any kind of tunnel just look into the shadows, it's that kind of freakiness. Like, I was scared to take the train the next morning.
Oh, my goodness. Even in the morning, right?
Yeah.
Because, no, that was, I always, like, think it's a good horror movie when, if there's four or five of us watching it, and people legit scream at a moment, or you jump, or everybody jumps at the same moment. There's like no feeling like, that's why I like horror so much. It's such a group experience. Cause like everybody, the adrenaline followed by the, oh my God, that was so scary. And like the bonding, like it's like a deep bonding experience for me. So I'm running out of horror movies. So I can no longer bond with my friends.
Send us suggestions. People send us suggestions.
Yeah, send us suggestions, please. Cause I've pretty much seen pretty much every psychological horror movie. And like I say, because I cut out all the gore stuff, like I can't watch Hostel, Saw, any of that shit. I hate it. Okay. I hate everything about it.
I hate, yeah, the torture porn stuff, yeah.
I hate, and I find it actually extremely disturbing that that is a thing.
Mm. I know.
You know, that's like a whole other topic, but I find that the rise of that kind of exploitation gore.
Yeah.
I mean, Japan has a load of like hardcore like the guinea pig series and stuff. I mean, of course I read about this stuff because I'm like a, you know, I like to feel the vicarious thrill without actually watching it myself. You know, it's like car crash like stuff. Yeah. You can't look away. But that kind of thing.
It was like around Halloween we were looking up the scariest haunted houses around the world. And some of that stuff, it was like, why would you put yourself through that?
That's right.
So there's one, I can't remember where it was.
Vegas. Was that the one with the really intense waterboarding and stuff?
What?
There was one, yeah, there was one with waterboarding.
That's Vegas.
So there was one where it was in someone's house.
That's right. I can't remember where
Virginia
that was.
Or something
somewhere
like that.
Somewhere backwards, I don't know.
And it was like a 8-hour experience where you just go and it's like a personalized psychological torture. It's fucked up.
Yep.
Apparently they only take like, what was it, like 4 people a season.
Something like that. Yeah. And the queue, the waiting list is like 2,000 people long. And it started off as this guy who...
Fuck?
You guys can go look at... A guy and his wife. And he used to be like a special effects dude who like worked on movies, I think. And they started this as like a Halloween thing for the neighborhood. And then it got so popular and it got proceedingly more and more and more scary. And there's like... It's like a cult thing on the internet now. So there's like, people have posted like the waiver you sign before you go in. It's like 3 pages long.
Oh, fuck.
And like, we were talking about this, like as Sarah says, like, what kind of person must you be? I mean, I don't know. I'm trying not to make a judgment call here. I'm trying not to make a judgment here, but like that, if you really lack that much stimulation in your life that you need someone to waterboard you to feel, like you really need a hobby, like a stimulating hobby. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, and then there was another one. I think the one in Vegas was like sexual torture.
Yes, I really just actually I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. Just reading about that made me so disturbed because basically that one, they're allowed to, I mean, in most haunted houses, of course, they can't touch you. Tosh, your face is hilarious right now. He's literally looking at me like, what the fuck? But like this one, they are allowed to touch you. They're allowed to strip you naked. They're allowed to, I think it stops before they're actually allowed to sexually assault you. I can't believe I just said that.
Oh, that's
right, but they
fucking
can strip
movie.
You naked. They can make extremely like they can make sexual like they can threaten to rape you. They can waterboard you. This is the Vegas one, I think. And it just why the hell you would put yourself through that unless you know. Unless you were a journalist being like, what does being waterboarded feel like?
And there was enough of that back in the 2000s, early 2000s.
Right.
Yeah.
God. Was it Christopher Hitchens?
Yes.
That had himself waterboarded and he survived. He lasted like 3 seconds.
Yep.
And he's like, this is torture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there are like 3 or 4 journalists who did that. Yep.
Yeah, there was a guy who was like really right-wing, pro-torture.
Yeah, and then he went into... Yeah, and he was just like, nope, this is no
He got it. I think he lasted like 3 seconds, and he completely changed his tune. Yeah.
That's who I was thinking of. He's like, "This is not enhanced interrogation. This is fucking torture."
Yep.
Wow, this podcast is super dark.
Yeah.
the general mood is really dark.
Yeah,
I've got like inverted crucifixes everywhere.
Well, speaking of which, that sort of the waterboarding and that stuff. Not to go further into the darkness, but just like I said recently, like I have a whole bunch of clips of like Daily Show and like other stuff that I've collected over the past, like from 2004 to 2010.
Wow.
During the whole Iraq thing. Yeah, I have a bunch of video, like news clips and like Daily Show clips and like Keith Olbermann's special comments, stuff like that. I've been kind of like going back through them, watching this. That was a really fucked up time. It's like,
yep. I mean, those pictures of, what was her name? Lindy England, the female soldier who was, arraigned for torture.
Was that Abu Ghraib?
Abu Ghraib, yeah. I saw those images in the paper in the UK and I've never forgotten them. Like, never. Oh, it's making me, okay, can we get off this? Because I'm actually getting super depressed now. So we talked about movies, we talked about
allergy season.
Dark stuff. But allergies, that was when we were, I remember when we were talking about allergies. That was a fun and more happy time. Like, approximately an hour ago.
Yes, actually over an hour ago.
An hour ago, right?
Oh God, we've been going long.
Well, the cat's totally passed out, so maybe it's time to wrap up.
I guess so.
He's gone into deep REM sleep.
starting to twitch.
Yeah.
But, I guess I should add this, just because I feel like being a dick because it was spoiled for me, but apparently Anthony Mackie is in Avengers 2. So...
In what?
Avengers 2.
Avengers
His 2. Name is on the poster.
Oh!
The guy who plays... He's the Falcon.
Didn't you just post about that on Facebook like literally 10 minutes ago? Someone else was like, why did you tell me that, Toshi?
Yep,
you're just like spreading
Randy.
The misery. I don't really care one way or the other.
I was just like, cause that
why
was...
is this such a big deal?
Because, well...
The Falcon from...
Captain America
Captain
2.
America. Sam.
Ooh.
Yep.
Anything. I love
my
Captain
favorite
America.
OT3.
OT3! Oh my God, Blast from the Past.
What's OT3?
Toshi. If you're gonna get into the yaoi industry, then you're gonna have to know about this. And OT3 is your OTP is your one true pairing. Mm-hmm. So the one like pairing in fanfiction or whatever that you will never ever give up. Uh-huh. Your OT3 is when it's threesome.
Oh, okay.
Right? So for example, in Supernatural, if I were a fan, okay, all right. You know how we've talked, obviously you guys if talk you a lot about Supernatural. Okay, yes. So did we talk about this already? I don't think we did. This happened after. Yeah. So we went, Sarah and I went out and we came home and it was really early in the morning. It was 6 o'clock. We were still really like up
but
and happy.
We did talk about that.
We did talk about that, right. And she showed me an episode.
Yes.
So,
I showed you parts of an episode, but then like
skipping
later on,
through it.
Yeah, I was like, this is the best part.
I was like, what the heck?
And then later on, I was watching an episode, like one of the newer episodes, and Kat was watching it sort of off and on with me. And then Kat was like, I kind of want to watch an episode. And I was like, oh! So I had her watch Faith from season one.
That's the turnaround point.
Yeah, that's the turnaround point.
What, you mean where the show got good?
Where the show started getting good.
Well,
so like,
they even say it, though. That's when the show stopped being Monster of the Week and actually started focusing on the relationship between the brothers. It started being about the mm-hmm. brothers and more than just them just hunting. It's about their...
So much eye candy in that show. Yeah, good Lord. I mean, like, I love that McG, yep. I can't pronounce his bloody name.
It's McG.
McG, his non-name. I mean, he is a director of music videos, right? I mean, I know him. He did like
some Charlie's Angels.
That's right. Charlie's Angels. Yep. And you know, he's got this image of being like a super macho, like boys, like man's man.
That's
who like makes kind of really sexist programming for men, kind of thing with like lots of tits and ass. And then he ends up fucking making Supernatural.
Well, he totally made the original intention of the show was Mick G was like, there are too many shows for chicks. I want to make a show for dudes. That's my impression of Mick G. I don't know what he sounds like.
That was really good. I'm best friends with him.
Yeah. And so, like, the first season, he tried to make it, like, totally for bros.
Yeah, it's like bros, like when bros sit down and have a heart-to-heart sort of thing. That sort of thing.
What?
But that's
if I had to pick a show that, no offense, Toshi, like most men, red-blooded men would not want to watch, probably Supernatural is up there.
But there are so many bros who love it. You can't imagine, like, okay, I have an OKCupid profile, and I put my favorite show is Supernatural. I get the most bro-y bros messaging me being like, yeah, that Dean, he's pretty okay. And I'm like, keyword there, pretty.
God, I can't. Problem is, I can't concentrate on the plot because I'm too busy looking at Jensen's face. He is like so my type. It's ridiculous. Except for the fact that I wish you hadn't told me he was like a Christian with a wife and like loved Jesus because that really turns me off. But
I think I like
a challenge. I like a challenge. So
I exaggerate. The fandom likes to point out that he has an aunt who's a lesbian, so he can't be homophobic or anything
God's
like
sake.
That.
Yeah, I have a black friend and a gay friend. I'm totally covered on all. It's totally fine. No, but I'm going to America in April.
Oh.
And, I'm probably gonna have to, like, I'm gonna have some surgery. So I'm gonna be, it's nothing serious. I'm gonna be, like, laid up for a couple of weeks. So I'm just envisioning myself, like, unable to move from the sofa, like, recovering from heavy duty pain meds. And Sarah's just gonna be like, right. It's like a Clockwork Orange. She's just gonna start playing Supernatural.
Just mixed with an eyedropper.
Destiel episode.
And my
ever.
Eyes are like pinned open, and I'm just eating Junior Mint.
I'll feed you those.
That bit, I don't mind. But like, no, I mean, eventually, like, I like to like make fun of it. And Tony, I think if Tony sat down and watched, he'd probably like it. I don't know. He just likes to make fun of it because you like it so much.
It's easy to dismiss at first. It's definitely. It's like
I have to say, like in all seriousness, I found the episode we watched, Faith, I found it a little cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I found it a little overacted.
I
found it a little like...
Jared kind of like...
Yeah, I mean, and I found it a little like... The vibe felt like Charmed. You remember the show from the 90s?
Yes.
Very like... How do I put this? Like very neatly wrapped up and like... doesn't feel like a real sense of drama or like any urgency,
mm-hmm.
but then I know it might recover later. Like I know that it might get better later.
Yeah. Season one and season two to some extent are very much like that, but then the stakes start to get higher and the drama starts to get
At first, it's very compartmentalized episode to episode. I mean, there is the overarching, they're searching for their dad stuff going on.
Is their dad dead? What's the deal?
You'll find out if you watch.
But at the beginning.
He's
ever really dead on Supernatural?
Oh, okay. Well, honestly, no, judging from, like, I mean, I've picked up, I think I've mentioned this before, but I pick up a lot about the general arc of the series. I think if I start watching it, I probably have spoiled myself just by listening to you guys talk.
Yeah, you'll probably say,
I've heard quite a few people, and what was really interesting was I posted on Facebook, I watched an episode of Supernatural, .. and I liked it. And like 18, 19 people liked it. Yeah. Liked the status. And there are people like coming out of the woodwork, as it were, who I never knew even liked it. Like people in the UK, like my high school friends, I was like, you like Supernatural? You like Supernatural? And you're so right. Like these really masculine hetero guys are like, yeah, Supernatural's cool. And I'm like, okay.
I don't know why, but I really feel this connection with Dean.
He's a man's man.
Yeah. Like I feel like I'd have a beer with him. We would like drive around, just like drive around.
Oh,
like,
that's
not
so hot. Stop it.
I'm getting turned on. If only I did a southern accent for that.
Also, I was not aware of the fact that they have southern accents because, like, Dean has, to me, a very, because I'm not American, right? He has, like, a discernible Texan accent. Mm-hmm. And, oh, it's so hot. It's such a thing for me. Like how Americans, there was that stupid article that came out that's like, a British accent is the sexiest thing for Americans. American women, and notwithstanding the fact that a British accent doesn't exist because there's like a billion accents in the UK, for me, like the biggest like turn on accent wise is a really thick southern accent, like Kentucky, and those like really dirty South accents. The American girls are like, oh my god, are you serious? And I'm like, yes,
Kentucky, no,
Kentucky,
but maybe like Louisiana,
that's so hot. Oh my god,
but like I don't like English accent.
Like Southern English?
Southern English accents.
Good, you have taste.
Northern English is all right. Scottish is cool.
Yay.
Oh. If you like...
Yes.
Certainly.
I was like waiting for something really devastating and it didn't come. Like, plus in Supernatural's corner is that what we watched the most recent episode. I was just on the couch and it came on. I was like, all right, I'll watch it. And, Sarah's like, there's a Scottish woman in it. And I was like, all right, let's see this. I'm ready to judge. Because, you know, mostly like being like Scottish, you know, like the American or Hollywood version of Scottish is usually a Canadian attempting a Scottish accent. I'm like, what the hell is that? Right.
Mike Myers.
He's actually really good.
His mom's Scottish.
Right. But he looks Scottish too. So like,
but the thing is that whenever the American actor does a different accent, it's always over the top.
And it slips. And you're like, what is that? That's like fucking, what's the word? Like Braveheart shit? Mel Gibson. But anyway, so I'm sitting there waiting to judge with a really like superior look on my face. And then this woman, the mother of,
Crowley,
who's English. I couldn't work it out. I was like making up this plot in my head.
Okay. It's complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated, all right. But I was like, she must have coming to Supernatural, not knowing anything about it, I was like, she must have disowned him because he somehow grew up with an English accent. And she's like, you're no son of mine! But she had, like, a really strong, kind of upper middle class Edinburgh accent, and I was like, holy shit, that's legit. You know, my teacher sounded like that in school. And Sarah was like, you should sound like that. And I'm like, yeah, I'll work on it. And like, if I went to America with that accent, I would clean up, unfortunately, but I'll work on it.
Yeah, to Americans, that accent is so adorable. Yeah.
I mean, I can do it if I want to, but it's not very natural. Oh god, I'm tired. But yeah, no, in conclusion, it's definitely on my to watch list. I just get intimidated with shows that have like 8 series.
Yes, I understand.
There are 10.
Oh god, shows for me, like, I'm so slow to watch anything that shows that are like over 3 series.
Yeah.
It's very like daunting.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
And each season has 24
to 26 episodes.
Jeez,
that's
a lot.
But honestly, you can watch the first 2 seasons with a see it, skip it guide.
Yeah. Because
there are some episodes that are just unwatchable.
A really filler.
Yeah. And what's like
the Bugs one.
Oh, yeah.
The Benders. You can also skip that one.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a see it, skip it guide.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Some of the episodes are entirely inconsequential.
Yeah.
Nothing, like, for the overarching plot, nothing happens.
Because it's on basic cable, they have to fill like a certain amount of time for a season.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, Supernatural should only be 13 episodes long.
That's what I'm thinking. Season. Like, I mean, 26?
20, some of them have 20, it's 22 to 24.
Right.
Depending on the season.
That's a lot of time to fill. I mean, of course you're going to get some variations in quality.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But like, then once you get to season three was short because of the writer's strike.
Mm.
Then 4 and 5, you have to watch that all the way through.
Okay.
4 and 5 is like
and,
the
I mean,
best.
I mean, if you're really like, okay, this is not my thing, it is possible to drop it at the end of 5. Mm. It is possible.
People who tell me they stop watching at 5.
Yep.
It makes me cry.
But, like, honestly, there's some...
Okay, I definitely can't do that. There's
it is, but, like, because, like, what's his name? Kripke. Eric Kripke, the original writer, original creator of Supernatural, basically, he had set out a... original. You've probably heard this from us anyways. But a basic outline plot, like, this is going to happen, and it spanned basically 5 seasons. And the first 5 seasons of Supernatural are that story, and it ends.
Right.
It essentially ends.
Right.
But it's, I mean, it still goes on after that, and at some points it kind of wavers and just, like, not sure what it's doing.
I mean, season 6 was actually pretty good.
Yep.
Season 6 has my best, my favorite Sam story arc. Season 7, I watched completely drunk.
And good choice!
I don't remember most
good
of it.
Good choice!
8 is also really good. It has my favorite Destiel moments.
Yeah. It's kind of like, have you ever watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I was a huge Buffy
fan. Okay, so it's like the first, like I guess you could say, like the first season is like the prologue, second, third, fourth, around that.
Buffy
like
was what? 8 seasons?
Seven.
I think seven. Yeah. Like 6 and 7 are kind of epilogue.
Yeah,
you could say so. Like, if you're gonna cut drop Buffy, you could at 5.
Mm-hmm. I tried to go back, and I'm aware that we're, you know, probably gonna have to wrap it up soon. But I went back and watched a couple of Buffy episodes, and you know what? It's like you can never go home again because
I loved
Buffy so much. It was like the only thing. And this is gonna reveal how old I am because I would like videotape the episodes off Sky,
what's a videotape?
You're older than me. Did you have Betamax? Jeez, like, but like I would video the episodes and watch them religiously, and you know, it was so good for its time, which was what, the late '90s, early 2000s, but. Going back, you're just like, God, this is tacky. Some of the episodes, I hate to say it because I love it, and it was a great series, and it was really sharp.
It's with a long, very long series like Buffy or with Supernatural, like just it's the good. I mean, the way I see it, like watch through it. Like if you love it, you know, watch through it once. Pick the ones that stick with you.
The really good episodes.
If you're ever gonna go back, just only visit those.
Yes, exactly. You never go home, Sammy. You can never go home. You never go home.
So I guess on that note, this has been the way
to be going home.
Yep. But we'll definitely be seeing more of you, hearing more of you.
Well, let's pretend that I am going to hell. And you guys, if you don't look for me, if you don't try to drag me out of hell, I'm going to be really upset. Even though I'm going to tell you don't live your lives without me.
That's so passive aggressive.
Like, you got a dog. Toshi, did you get a dog? I told you, rule number one, no dogs in the car.
I'd get a cat.
But, and what is this on my CD player? Or tape player, I guess.
Tape player. I mean, I know this is the thing. I know this is a Supernatural reference, but I'm not quite clear as to what it is.
You'll get
that. Sam got a dog. That's all you need to know. Season 8.
Okay. All right,
it's
cool.
It's very upsetting.
That was like the main moment of season 8.
But I guess, so that has been this episode of the Wayward Podcast.
That's like a weird ending.
Yeah,
place.
It's just a way to cut. But if we don't, the minute, like, I already, like, oh,
and
God.
So
like,
things have
I was
come
like, I look at the time, like, oh, shit, we got into Supernatural.
Back
like,
to is, Supernatural.
This is going
to
go for another 30 minutes, which it kind of has. So,
yeah,
this has been the Wayward Podcast. I guess, as an outro, Sarah, you have some song?
We're going to have to play the song.
Oh, my God.
Carry On My Wayward Son by Kansas.
Breaking protocol, but that sounds appropriate. So this has been the Wayward Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Wayward Podcast. You can email us at Wayward Podcast, waywardpodcast@gmail.com.
Try that again. Take two.
You do it.
waywardpodcast@gmail.com.
We do read every email and we see every tweet. We appreciate them very much. We're part of the World of Us Cast podcast of oneofus.net, which Sarah will be returning to. And you can follow them. I check out the website, become a subscriber, please. This has been the Weird Podcast. I am Toshi.
I'm Kat.
And I'm Sarah. Not saying goodnight, just saying.
And we'll see you next time.
Oh, that was an amazing ending, guys.